Hi, I'm Koshin Chris Kane, abbot of the Puget Sound Zen Center on Vashon Island, Washington. We're glad to be able to bring you these podcasts. If you'd like to learn more about our Zen Center, please visit our website at pscc.org.
The topic for today's Dharma talk is opening to suffering, which is the key to true compassion. I think most of us would like to kind of skip over the suffering part and just move straight into compassion. So it seemed like sometimes we should talk about suffering a little bit and be a little bit more conversant with it. I actually thought of this topic before last weekend's shootings, before the raids in Mississippi on the chicken plant. And it's really hard to know where to start when all this sort of stuff is coming at us, when it's out there in the airwaves and we're on overload. We just can't move past that, past feeling our own pain about what's going on, about knowing what to do. For example, we see there's pictures on the news of huge piles of flowers at these makeshift memorials because people want to do something, and so they buy flowers and put them there. Or screaming at the TV when we see the images of the children separated from their parents. It's really hard. I've seen a lot more of these small GoFundMe type projects that are appearing online. People who need money for medical expenses, for funerals, all of that. And I think a lot of people contribute to those as well because it makes them feel like, again, like they're doing something concrete to help with this suffering. So how do we manage with all of that? Because that's a kind of a grab bag of things to be doing, and I think most of us feel that's not really getting to the heart of the matter. So I wanted to talk briefly today about the three kinds of suffering. We think of suffering as one big mass of pain, but there's really three kinds of suffering according to Buddhist thought. First is what we normally think of as suffering, which is earthquakes and natural disasters, adverse conditions coming upon us. Includes the physical and mental sufferings of birth, aging, illness, and death. Distress from what's not desirable going on in our lives. That's called dukkha-dukkha, the suffering of suffering. But that's only the first kind. The second kind of suffering is called viparinama-dukkha, which is the dukkha or suffering of when pleasant or happy experiences change and become less pleasant or downright unpleasant because the causes and conditions that brought them about have changed. You know, this is sunsets, you know, a beautiful sunset, and then it's gone. You go, oh, go look at the sunset, go look at the sun. Oh, you missed it. You know, it's everything from that, the leaves falling off the trees, relationships ending, houses disintegrating, cars getting dents, you know, all these things that we like and we want to take a snapshot and hold it in that way, and then it doesn't hold together. The third form of suffering is called sankhara dukkha, and this is a more subtle form of suffering. It's related to the other two forms, but it's basically the recognition that suffering is intrinsic to our very existence as conditioned or composite beings. Because we come from numerous causes and conditions, things are always changing. There's really nothing that we can grasp onto. There's really no ground to stand on. And that leaves us with that sense of being ill at ease, nervous, a little bit anxious about things, can't quite put our finger on why, but there's that quality of the other shoe is going to drop at some point, and we don't know when or where or how. So that's sankhara dukkha, this unsatisfactoriness pervading all existence. And that's the essence of the samsaric realm, what we call samsara. Another way that we can look at this is that because things are always changing, our expectations or standards are never going to be met. I mean, we might go through them at some point, you know, but then, oh, we're past and it's gone, it's over. So we can't ever capture those, what we see as our expectations, our standards. That includes the images we have of good times in the past. Oh, I like the way it used to be, you know. Or ideal situations in our head. In this political season, everybody's got an idea of what the world ought to look like. And we're trying to match up with the person we think is going to be best at creating that world. Guess what? Not going to happen. It's not going to happen. So how do we deal with that? How do we deal with that? There's a slightly different way in which we work with suffering, each of these different kinds of suffering. So the viparinama dukkha, which is the second one, and this is the one that's the reality of impermanence, is in some ways that's the most straightforward one, because our regular meditation practice and the way we contemplate impermanence can help us to release some of our attachment to having things the way they are. We get a little more resilient, a little more flexible around, well, okay, I knew that wasn't going to last. We begin to change so that that becomes more of a default way of thinking about things. Well, that was nice while it lasted, and now we're going to do something different. And that's really what we're practicing with this second kind of suffering, which I think is really the easiest one to start working with it. It's important as part of that to be able to fully acknowledge that we are attached to things. We have to be able to recognize what we're attached to and look at it and look at ourselves being attached and to fully acknowledge it in order to be able to let it go. If we can't do that, we can't really move past it. There's this, Charlie and I right now are sorting through stuff in our house. We've been there 40 years. And there's a lot of stuff. And so, you know, there's this woman from Japan, Marie Kondo, who does sorting through things, and it's kind of a little bit goofy, but there's some things about it that are really very, very useful. And one of those is that she says when you're going to get let go of something that you've used for years, there's a quality of gratitude that you want to express to the object. And that might sound weird. Hello, dear old socks. I've worn you for years, and now you've got holes in you, and so I just want to thank you, and out you go. And that's a little crazy, but there's actually something very sweet about it, to be able to acknowledge that things change, they deteriorate, you can't use them anymore, we've outgrown them, all of these things. So, and the Japanese, she's actually very much in line with the Zen tradition in that way of finding beauty in things and value in things as they deteriorate. There's a whole wabi-sabi aesthetic in Japan is based on that, using things till they wear out and then letting them go. And through working with this kind of suffering, we're in a better position to tackle the bigger stuff in that first kind of suffering, dukkha, dukkha. These are easier in one sense in that you can't avoid them or deny their existence. You know, if there's an earthquake, we've got to deal with it. You can't say, oh, it's not that big a deal. A fire, you know, I had talked to a couple people who went through the campfire in Paradise last year. That's pretty overwhelming when you think it's terrifying. There's no way to avoid dealing with those kinds of things. But when we begin to be able to see a way to letting go of some of the smaller things, it builds a strength. It builds those muscles in us to be able to deal with the big changes, the seismic changes in our lives. And the big ones in our own personal lives, aging, becoming sick, dying. These are ones that we all, without exception, have to face in ourselves and our loved ones. And if we can't practice with everything around us to do that, that's unfortunate. So here, working with these big events in this first kind of suffering, the key is not to take the events personally. Sometimes that's really hard when the events really affect us personally. But if we cannot take the events personally, recognize the universal quality of the suffering, and take whatever action is necessary to alleviate that suffering or help cope with it, that's what helps the most. But if we fall into why me, it just adds a layer of pain that is totally beyond what you need. You've got enough to deal with without also dealing with why me. It's a question that doesn't have an answer. That's the truth. So what we're learning in the Viparinama dukkha, the ones where we're dealing with impermanence, we begin to understand that there really is no solidity to the things and in our life. You know, we say our house, we love our house. Mm-hmm. Our house has changed over the years. It's not really one entity. Things have been replaced in my body. Every cell's been replaced in the last 7 years. It's remarkable. This is not the same body it was. And if we can begin to understand that about those material things, we're able to take that understanding into this dukkha-dukkha and say, you know, this thing called a self doesn't really exist, so how can any of this stuff be directed at me when there isn't any me? Me is a construct. You know, stuff is just happening. How do we deal with it? And then the most subtle kind of suffering is sankhara dukkha, and it's the most pervasive. This is really what we're experiencing in all the upheaval in the world now, is it's just more exposed to us, just how frail this whole setup is, how much of a house of cards we've built. The trick here is to let go of clinging to the ideal to which we're comparing what we're living in now, and finding it wanting. What's making us suffer in this is, this isn't exactly what I wanted. and there's no way visible to see how to make it exactly what I want, you know. Everybody should be able, no child should go hungry, absolutely. That's a wonderful ideal. No child should go hungry. Are we going to achieve that? No. We're not going to achieve that, because as soon as you feed one, another is hungry. As soon as you feed this one, another is hungry. Another child is born. There's no end to it. It's like weeding your garden. You start at one end, work to the other, you got to go back and start over again. There's no way that you're going to achieve those ideals. That doesn't mean you don't have those ideals, but you don't cling to them. You don't make yourself miserable by clinging to them. There's a saying in the Talmud that I love so much. You're not required to complete the task, but neither are you permitted to put it down. Mm-hmm. And I really like that. Mm-hmm. Nobody's saying you got to finish it, but they are saying don't give up. Don't give up. Keep going. So there's a sense of pacing, a sense of understanding what it is we can do. What is doable? What can we do? We have to be okay with failing sometimes. Whenever we try to do something, we're going to fail. It's an expression that one of my Tibetan teachers uses that I love. Erring and erring, we walk the unerring path. Erring and erring, we walk the unerring path. We're going in the right direction. We're going to make mistakes. We're not going to get to the end, but we can keep going. This is not some new phenomenon we're experiencing now. It's always been like this. Life has always been like this. If you really look back in history, it's always been like this. Things haven't been satisfactory. People are trying to make changes. They fight over what those changes should be. And even when we're working in that way, almost immediately after a moment has passed, we pick and choose what to remember about that moment, shaping it to suit the needs of our own narrative. So we don't even really know what has happened anymore. It's gone from our memory. The totality of it is gone, and we just remember the pieces we want to remember. Remember how great the 50s were? You know? I mean, people are, make America great again. In what way? You know? I mean, everybody has picked and chosen what they want to remember. So we each have a different view of that time. And when we can learn to care for ourselves in our own experience of suffering, these three kinds of suffering, and work with each of them in the most useful way, then we're in a position, a better position, to truly extend compassion to others. We need to be able to work skillfully with our own experience of suffering first, to find the most useful way to work with other people in their suffering. I was, it's really scary, for example, to think that about climate change. This is certainly just one example of, we may be past the tipping point, or maybe 18 months is a tipping point, or maybe 10 years is a tipping point. There's many different ways people have talked about it. But the fact of the matter is, we're going through one of these big upheavals, one of the great extinctions. We're in it. You know, we can get caught in the scariness of it and fighting it and trying to put it off, or we can get bigger than that and look at it and say how many wonderful opportunities there are for us as bodhisattvas, us trying to help to create a little less suffering in this way. Not a sense that we're going to end this or turn it around. We may be well past that. And there's factors beyond just what we're doing. We're not the only things on this planet causing its destruction. But we can look at it in that way. We can be the one to pick up that one starfish and get it back into the water. You know, it doesn't make a difference except to that starfish. And that's perfectly fine.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Puget Sound Zen Center. Thanks so much for listening. To learn more about our community, you can visit our website at pszc.org.